This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, Kofi Annan calls the Israel strike on the UN deliberate, and polls show pessimism. Joining us today from Georgia Public Radio and Atlanta, economist and author Julianne Malveaux. She's president and CEO of Last Word Productions. And from our New York bureau, Walter Fields, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com, and Bob Meadows, writer for People Magazine. I welcome you all. Before we get into what we were going to discuss, I can't help but want to get some idea of what you all thought about Segment A's discussion, and that is the legacy of Condoleezza Rice, and particularly how she's handled the course of the last couple of weeks with the problems in the Middle East. Julianne Malveaux.
Well, I think that it was a really great discussion, Ed. Phyllis Bennis really hit it right on the head when she talked about the issue of legacy. Her legacy is going to be the deaths of these innocent people in Lebanon. But, you know, this notion, Bill Fletcher's notion that she's an accidental black person, all African-American people do not have to be liberal. And so I kind of bristle at that. She is an African-American woman who is wholly wrong about foreign policy.
Walter, the idea that some might think it's a little strong to assume that this will be her only legacy. She's done a number of things, but certainly this will go high in the bio when you read about her down the line, one might believe.
Well, I think she's just singing from the neoconservative songbook. I mean, she's consistent with how neoconservatives have positioned themselves on the issue of the Middle East. And I agree with Julianne. I mean, I think you can be black and conservative, but you can also be black, conservative, and wrong. And I think she just happened to be wrong. You know, there was a funny skit in the Dave Chappelle show where they had a racial lottery, and she was given away as sort of a free choice along with Colin Powell. And I think for many black Americans, that's probably going to be, you know, the perception of her legacy as we move forward.
Yet, Bob, it's interesting because we are, as a people, quick to jump up and yell and talk about we're not a monolith, and sometimes it's difficult for the community to accept different thought down the line.
That's absolutely true. I mean, you look at people like Condoleezza Rice, and, you know, you can go, there are many, many people you can name, but all Condoleezza Rice has to do, really, is just go to a black church and she will be accepted as if she has never left us. Honestly, like everybody said, I hate to hear somebody's blackness question, because as a black person, you can't hide in the closet and pretend you're not what you are. This is how Condoleezza Rice has grown up, and she is representing her. I think her legacy will be as the first black woman in such a high power position of power.
I agree. All right, let's turn our attention to the latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. The findings are very interesting, some of which aren't surprising. 60% of the people polled are doubtful that the Iraqi war will come out for a successful conclusion on the United States side. 80% say that America's decline, the pessimism we see, is a long-term decline, they believe. But here's what was interesting to me, Walter Fields. 65% of those polled feel less confident that the lives of their children will be better than the lives they've led. And as we know, that has been almost since the beginning of this country, the American dream. That juxtaposed to 2001, when this question was last asked to respondents, only 49% believe that to be the case.
Well, you know, in many ways, it calls to mind my memories of growing up, you know, during the period of the Cold War, and how because of the supposed Soviet threat, many parents were very fearful about the possibilities of nuclear war. And I think we're back at that point in this country where if you look around the world, there's not a corner of the world where you really have stability. And I think for many parents looking at their children, and I look at my 7-year-old daughter, I am very concerned about what type of world she will grow up in. Because as we look, we're beginning to see not only the issue of sort of military conflicts, but we're also beginning to see a destabilized global economy. And the fact of the matter is that most Americans are very concerned that their children will not even have the type of life that they had, which is a very scary thought.
Bob Meadows, here's what's interesting in all of this. It seems to me, and this is just my observation, but it seems to me that if these polls are to be believed, that many people have almost resigned themselves to that fact and are doing little to try to change it, whether it's through voting, because we still see abysmal numbers of voters turning out, whether it's becoming active in the streets and protesting, whether it's participating within your neighborhood to try to better the block. We just don't see it.
A lot of times when things really seem so bleak and you can't have any influence over it whatsoever, such as your vote doesn't count or your representatives don't vote in the way that you would like to see them vote, you drop out of the But I can't honestly say that the people are doing that. Parents are still doing the best they can for their children. They're still trying to instill them with values and things like that to make them be better. And also, you have to let them know that, hey, this isn't the world that I grew up in. You're going to have to do better. You're going to have to be better. And you're going to really have to make your voice heard. So parents have to lead by example in making their voices heard as well.
Do you believe that to be the case, Julianne Malvo, that the majority, of course, there are people out on the front lines, of course, there are parents that are intricately involved in their children's lives, but what about a generality here, if we can allow that for the roundtable? Do you believe that to be the case, that people are in the mindset that they can make change?
You know, Ed, the thing that I've been talking about a lot when I'm running around the country speaking is a theme I call the end of imminence. It's what is happening to the United States once the imminent world power, the dollar, will soon be overtaken by the euro. As Walter said, we do have a destabilized global economy. If we want to look at children, at young people, there's a young woman, her last name is, I forget. Anyway, her book is called Generation Debt, and it talks about how 20-somethings have it so much worse than 20-somethings 30 years ago. We are investing less in our children collectively, although individual parents may be doing their best. When I graduated from college, I had $2,000 in debt. The average young person now has $20,000 in debt. And so we really are not investing in our young people. We're not investing in our infrastructure. And Europe is turning out more engineers than the United States is. India and China turning out more engineers than the United States is. This pessimism is, quite frankly, very justified. But the challenge is, as you said in introducing this issue, what do we do about it? It seems to me that too many people have accepted it. Another big part of this is the fact that our population is shifting in ways that this administration and others have been wholly insensitive to. So that as you see more Latinos, more African-American people, it's like, who's going to take care of old people? Who's going to do the work? Who's going to be... But we won't invest in those people in terms of education. We see ourselves cutting back, especially K through 12 inner cities. So when you look at some of this, you have to say that the pessimism is justified, and it's very unfortunate.
And, Walter, I don't claim to be the great economist that Julianne is, but I do know 1 + 1 = 2, and the idea that individual debt is one thing, but the mounting debt this country is taking on, particularly each day this war goes on, eventually that has to be paid for.
Without a doubt, but understand that these deficits were also a conservative strategy. I mean, during the Reagan administration, they piled up huge deficits, then turned around and built up the military and said, we don't have money for social programs. They purposely have bankrupted this country. And people need to understand that, that what you're beginning to see is this notion of a shift. You have a small group of neoconservatives now who are creating this new world order. And it is about the end of imminence, because if you look across the world, and the opinion of the United States is in the toilet right now. And part of it's because most of the world is beginning to understand how the United States is beginning to try to lay its footprint all throughout the globe. And there is this really angry reaction right now, particularly in the Arab world, about what's happening in the Middle East, because they see that as part and parcel of why the U.S. went into Iraq. So this notion of a destabilized world order is really the function of a small group of neoconservatives and conservatives who have basically decided to reshape the world.
It seems to me, Bob Meadows, that this country would go into some type of anaphylactic shock or something like that if, in fact, we're knocked from our perch as the world police, the big guy, the number one country. While that is, one would believe, generations off, we are seeing almost a sea change in how the world looks at the United States.
We have not really won a major – we haven't won a war since – I mean, granted, we won the Persian Gulf War, but that was a different – we had a different agenda at that time. It hasn't happened since World War II. That's 60 years ago. We can't just throw our weight around the way we used to, because people realize they can't fight us. Nobody can really fight us, but what you can do is you can keep pecking away, and all you have to do is just keep surviving. So what does that do? It just makes us look weak. It makes us look ridiculous for going into all these different situations. The army right now, the military rather, is stretched so thin We can't even take on another project. We can't do anything in Sudan. We can't do anything to help Israel out. We can't, or whoever. We can't do anything because we're so stretched. What we really needed to do was just go find Osama bin Laden. Everybody would have supported us for that forever because they understood. But instead, we're in this situation where now we have major, major egg on our face. And yeah, our reputation all around the world is shot.
Yeah, you talk about the Sudan. Tomorrow we'll have an interview with the president of Southern Sudan and the vice president of Sudan, and that will be interesting. I conducted that yesterday, so we'll ask that folks tune in and listen to that. All right, let's turn our attention now to Pennsylvania.
And if I could just jump in for a quick second, just one quick second, because you say it's going to be generations. It's not going to be generations. It's going to be a couple of decades. If you look at what's happening with China and population and the economic pressure that they're putting on the world, in addition, as they industrialize and westernize, as cars go there, the impact on gas prices, in addition to the way that they're investing in education, I think that it's around the corner to see us knocked off our perch if we haven't been knocked off it already.
All right. Well, I'm the ugly American, so I'm holding true to two or three generations, doggone
USA.
It. All right. All right, Julia. Now let's turn our attention to Pennsylvania and the race for governor there. Lynn Swann, really stumbling, some might say. Others will suggest it's simply that he is outmanned dollar for dollar by Governor Ed Rendell there, the Democrat. But we are now seeing the president headed this way. We should note that Lynn Swann, the former NFL All-Pro wide receiver, was handpicked by the White House to make this run. The president coming in for a $10,000 per person dinner, an opportunity to have photo ops with George Bush. Walter Fields, does it surprise you at all that we are seeing candidates not necessarily disassociate themselves? That happens a lot from two-term presidents who find themselves in different kind of quandaries historically. But what we are seeing in some people's minds is not the kind of traction black candidates thought they might have, i.e. Lynn Swann, Kwesi Mfume, Mr. Steele, etc.
Well, the problem with Lynn Swann, I mean, the president is radioactive right now, and many Republican candidates, you know, are sort of disinviting the president. Lynn Swann, I saw Lynn Swann at the Republican National Convention, and I tell you, he was an isolated soul. I mean, it was very stark to see Lynn Swann and Mike Steele in Madison Square Garden because they just stood out like, you know, it was incredible. So I think the problem that black Republican candidates are going to have is how do you position yourself vis-a-vis this White House? And how do you articulate a vision that the stench of this administration isn't hoisted upon you? I mean, Lynn Swann is going to walk a very difficult line here because he's against a well-financed Democrat incumbent, Ed Rendell. And the chances of Lynn Swann winning this race are really almost zero to none. They picked him because, of course, he's a former Pittsburgh Steeler, high name recognition. But after you get beyond that, you can't run away from this White House, even if the president doesn't show up. Believe me, the Democrats in that race are going to paint George Bush all over Lynn Swann.
Here's what's interesting, Julianne Malvo, the idea of Michael Steele having enough money in his coffers to, in some degree, disassociate himself with the president. Lynn Swann is trying to do it without being, quote, disrespectful, because he needs the president to come in to build these coffers.
Two very different candidates, two very different kinds of appeal. Mike Steele is a pro. I mean, I disagree with him on virtually everything, but, you know, it's interesting to see how he has gone in and peeled away layers of Democratic support. Dorothy Bailey, for example, a woman sister who is a former Prince George's County commissioner, is supporting him. You know, lots of visible Democrats supporting him because he goes to our churches, he does our thing, you know, he's thoughtful and all of that. He's wrong, but he's thoughtful. Swann, on the other hand, is a political novice who doesn't have nearly the appeal or the charisma of Michael Steele. And from that perspective, he probably needs radioactive Bush much more than Steele does. He also, you know, Steele has been in politics. Swann is just sort of coming out there. It's a fascinating kind of thing. He of the three African-American men who are running on Republican tickets, he could be easily called the sacrificial lamb. Republicans go out and pick somebody, but then they don't really, can't do very much with them. Ken Blackwell looks good in his race, and Michael Steele, it'll depend on what happens with the Mfume Cardin primary. But in this case, his brother's just out there, you know, being Forrest Gump. He's there.
Bob Meadows, though, it's interesting to see when you line all of these men up who are running for statewide office, the governor seats in these states, the differences, and also the idea that I don't know that we've seen the excitement, even on the Democratic side with Kwesi and Fume, from the black community that many people thought would certainly be perhaps higher in volume right now.
Well, I would imagine it's, you know, some of it is, as Walter said, you know, once you get past Lynn Swann's name and connection with the Pittsburgh Steelers, there's really not much there necessarily for to get excited about. And so that's got to be it. These aren't exciting candidates. It's not Barack Obama, you know, from 2 years ago that people can really rally behind like that. So you got to imagine that, you know, black people aren't just, you know, you see a black face and you get it. It's not like that anymore. You really have to come to the table with something. And that's something that Swann, the others, you know, they're not necessarily providing.
You know, it's interesting Bob says that, and while we don't, Walter, run to the television every time a black face is on as we did in the 60s and early 70s, there is still this sense of pulling for the black contestant on a game show or the black person in a race, and it is an individual, I guess, whether it's charisma or a situation that, particularly on the political side, either excites you or does not. And as I said, I just don't see the excitement across the board for any of these candidates. Are we just too far away from election day, or is there something here?
I think we're a little too far away from election day, and I will say I still do run to the TV when I see a black person, particularly on the news, and they're not, you know, they aren't the news, they are actually delivering the news. I find that real exciting. But I think we are far from election day, and I think Mfume's race is going to be very interesting because despite the issue of non-excitement, if Kwesi is able to take Prince George's County and Baltimore City and Democratic Baltimore County, he will probably win that primary. And that's when I think the excitement will kick in, when it's a Steele versus Mfume race. Then I think you're going to see some real excitement.
Yeah, that'll be some, with 30 seconds, Julian, that'll be exciting if indeed you see two black candidates vying for that seat.
And if Mfume is able to pull that off, Kai, kudos to him, because, you know, Cardin has basically outraised him like by a factor of three or four. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think we are too far from the elections. In Ohio, there is a lot of excitement about Blackwell. It's very interesting. Yeah. I was in Cincinnati a week or so ago, and he's like a lightning rod on either side. I think in Pennsylvania, Swann he's a football player.
All right, we'll see. Bob, Julianne, Walter, thanks so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank
a lot.
You.